My name's Nick Georges, otherwise known as Granddad Motorbike by my kids. I'm an OAP, 72 years old, and I'm absolutely horrified by our present government. I can't understand that this supposedly our duly elected representatives who represent us, how they can represent us by sending refugees to concentration camps in the middle of Africa. How they're happy to send refugees and lock them up in prison boats in the middle of the sea. How they're happy for refugees to let them deliberately be drowned in the Channel. How they're destroying our NHS. How they're attacking the poorest people in the country, the horrendous cuts to social service, all these cuts, and people's wages are so much lower now, in effect, than they were 15 years ago. And I'm talking about refugees. These are all refugees from Afghanistan, from Syria, from all over the world, from wars that our country has started and fought in. We have created these refugees.
Well, hang on, Nick, because we haven't, have we? I mean, many of these people are genuine economic migrants just looking for a better life in a more prosperous part of the world, and that's nothing wrong with that. But you can't say they're all refugees. They're not. Many are coming to make money in order to send back to their families.
Yes, you're probably quite right in that, but an awful lot of them are political refugees from other countries who are fleeing war and strife. And I agree to a certain extent you must have some cap on it, but it just seems that the poorest and the worst off of them are the ones that are persecuted most. I just see our government as being incredibly inhumane. And additionally, you know, we've got no money, and yet we're pouring so much money into fighting these proxy wars in Ukraine. We're constantly pouring money and weapons into Israel and capitalizing from that war there by making as much money we can out of it as possible and trying to kill as many Palestinians as possible. And I just find it really sad that this government that we, in theory, voted in are just so inhumane when it comes to treating the poorest and the worst off in the world. I mean, like, for example, they're now starting this new war in Yemen. And again, it's against one of the poorest countries in the world. They're pouring weapons into Palestine, the poorest people in the world. They're crushing the living standards of the poorest people in England. And I just cannot understand how we've got such a government in our country. I just think it's awful. I don't feel we have much control over it. There are two parties in our land, Conservatives and Labour. I think from what I can gather, the powers that be want Labour to be into power. And what they're doing, I suspect there's going to be a big scandal manufactured very soon about Richie Sunak and the Conservatives. And they will literally lose all their support. And we will have probably, there will be no one else to vote for but Starmer's, because they want Starmer in power. Starmer got into power purely by massive funding from Israel. And when he gets into power, I suspect we will just become another vassal state of Israel.
And so can you say something about that link between the Israel lobby and Keir Starmer?
Well, yes, they funded him. I mean, how do you think there were 10 people, as far as my understanding of it is, when Corbyn got ousted, there were 10 people who were put in the running list to accede him. Starmer wasn't even on that list, and somehow he jumped over the whole lot of them and suddenly became head of the Labour Party. And he did that via massive funding but from Israel. So he's basically their puppet. And when he becomes to be our prime minister, you know, we will be absolutely at the behest of Israel. And we've seen how Israel behaves, how it treats its own people, how it treats the Palestinians. And that thought, obviously, really, I find that a very distressing thought.
Well, I mean, it is very worrying looking at this most likely incoming Labour government. I mean, just here in Bristol, our four Labour MPs, Kerry McCarthy, Darren Jones, Karen Smith and Thangam Debonair on the 15th of November 2023, after 5 weeks of the genocide in Gaza, the House of Commons voted on the SNP's mildly worded King's Speech Amendment calling for all parties to agree to an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Now, this is the opposition, remember, not the government, but all four Bristol MPs abstained in that vote.
Unbelievable. It is absolutely unbelievable. And I don't understand how they can support such inhumanity. What's happened to them? I mean, I'm sure they're all normal human beings. Normally, would they refuse or abstain from a vote for a ceasefire when it's so blatantly obvious there's a genocide being caused? What's happened to these people to make them be like this?
Well, the interesting thing is, of course, a ceasefire is completely uncontroversial, and it's not blaming one side or the other, is it?
No, I know. I know. I just can't believe that they're like that. And sort of leading on a little bit from that, like, you know, our government is now literally trying to go to war with Yemen. And the Houthis have said that they will stop all their action in the Red Sea, provided there's a ceasefire, Israel declares a ceasefire against and stops killing the Palestinians. So rather than go down that line, they're adding a whole new layer of war. Our government's adding a whole new layer of wars on. They're escalating this whole war business and the threat of starting a World War III, rather than just saying, yes, let's vote for a ceasefire in Palestine and vote for peace and less killing. They're choosing this route of choosing more killing, more murder. And again, Yemen, one of the poorest countries in the world. I just don't understand what's wrong with our government. It's just horrific, really.
But it's not just the government, is it? It's also the main opposition parties too. I mean, at least certainly the SNP seem to have a little bit of humanity left, as do the Lib Dems and the Greens. But anyone who's even close to actual power seems to be cheerleaders for this genocide.
I know. Well, what I've heard happen is that when Starmer came into power, he had an agreement with Boris Johnson, I believe, at the time, or maybe Richie Sunak, I'm not sure on that. But apparently he had this agreement that in anything to do with wars or terror or anything like that, Starmer promised he would always vote with the government. So there's no chance of Labour ever going against the government, calling for a ceasefire or anything that's not authorised by the government. Which is, you know, it's quite a sobering thought, really.
They're supposed to be... it's not an opposition, is it? This is the point.
It's not at all.
I mean, interesting that anybody that does dare to speak out in a pro-Palestinian fashion is accused of anti-Semitism and removed from the party. So this is not democracy. It's no more of a democracy than Israel is.
No, absolutely. We're moving into the closest to a true police state that we have ever been into. It is quite horrific. And just a little side story here. I'm staying with my sister in Cornwall. Woke up this morning. My brother-in-law shouts out, we got some visitors. My sister was in bed. I came downstairs, and there were four policemen in my sister's kitchen, four huge, great policemen, all fully battened up with body-worn videos, tasers, huge, great batons and everything, all their armour plating. And my poor sister woke up, came down, struggled down in her dressing gown, an old-age pensioner, and they said, right, we've come to arrest you. And we're going to search your house. And, you know, you talk about a police state and they are arresting her for criminal damage. And what she'd done to, she's trying to write to her MP, Cheryl McCraw, about his Conservative MP, about what's going on in Palestine. And Cheryl McCraw just never answers, no response. Her own MP will not reply to her. And so what she did, she took a drawing pin and a note, a placard, a photograph, and she tapped a drawing pin and pinned this note to Cheryl McCraw's door.
This is my message to my local Tory MP in Truro. She's called Sherilyn McCrory. I've written to her asking her to explain why she backs killing Palestinians, why she backs arms to Israel that enables that to happen. She has never replied to my emails. Everybody that I've spoken to who has written to her has said she doesn't reply to theirs. There we go. And the message at the top says, Sherilyn McCrory. Underneath, paid to back genocide, torture, brutality.
And apparently that is criminal damage. She put a drawing pin in a door and the police came down, four of them, two cars, plainclothes car and a police car, to arrest her for doing criminal damage to Sherilyn McCrory's door. They searched the whole house. And in the end, finally, she agreed that she would come down to the police station at a future date with a solicitor and be interviewed by them.
I'm just going to explain. Okay, these are very low-level offences. Okay, there's damage to a front door of the MP's office in Truro, where damage has been caused. There's been pins put in the door. If April doesn't want to talk to us at all, then we may have to take her to a police station. She's been arrested. Yeah. The arrest has been explained to her.
So, and we also don't know what we're up against. So, and we like to sort of, we treat things in a worst case scenario kind of thing as well.
If she is willing to accept that she's damaged the front door to the MP's office by placing placards on there. So my explanation...
Which is the only thing you've got CCTV for, you say?
We've got CCTV for that.
Okay, will Sherilyn McCrory get that letter?
We have to, because it's from her office. So, yeah, we have
to. So that's one of the few ways that we can speak to our MP.
I'm not going to get involved in the political side of it.
Because April has tried to speak to her.
I can't, you know, she's your MP, or she's the MP for Truro and Falmouth, and I'm not here for that. People are entitled to free speech and to express themselves in any way. The line that has
then,
to be
then what are you doing here then? Arresting
it's been
lady.
Explained to April, so it's been explained to April.
Criminal damage is why we're here.
We're looking at the damage to the door. And if April's willing to accept, yes, I damaged the door, I'm talking about the door at the moment, then we can use community resolution for that. If we don't, then we would possibly have to, we could invite her in as a voluntary attendant to the police station. My colleague said about drawing pins and things like that. I'm not going to look for drawing pins. I'm not going to look for a hammer.
You'll probably find some all sorts of other stuff.
I've already seen there's pins on the wall here. There's pins in your door. There are millions of them, so there's no point in that, all right? Quick scan around. Oh. We've got, like James has explained, we've got powers to search.
Yeah, okay.
So.
And then finally, they did de-arrest her and they went away. But I mean, you talk about a police state, and my poor sister, she was so upset, she literally fainted on the kitchen table in front of them. She was so distressed. And, you know, this is what it's coming to.
This sounds like Gestapo tactics, actually. It sounds like the sort of thing that is designed to threaten and intimidate, but actually they know themselves that it's got no basis in law.
Absolutely. It's got no basis in law. I mean, how it can be criminal damage to put a drawing, now tap a drawing pin into someone's front door who's your MP to try and get your message to her because she won't respond, which is her duty to answer all her letters from her constituents. It's just horrific. And to go down there and see these four hooligans, thugs, intimidating my poor sister who'd literally just woken up and seeing her virtually faint on the kitchen table from the shock of it all, because she put a drawing pin in someone's door. It's just...
Well, in a way, I suppose it's a proud example of what's going on the home front. But do you want to just look for a minute at what's been happening in Gaza? Because it's been, since we first spoke, round about the middle of October, Nick, there's been quite a few developments.
Yes, there have been lots of developments. I think most people are probably aware of the figures. I mean, we quote all these figures because the figures are horrific. But as soon as you've quoted them, they're out of date. Just for those that don't know, I think at the moment there's 25,000 people have been officially registered and logged with their refugee status and numbers as dead. I think it's something like 61,000 people have been injured. There's 15,000 people buried under the rubble. Of those 15,000, there's probably 1,000 maybe are still alive under there and just dying slowly. There's no equipment, no machinery to move to get them out of the rubble. There's over 10,000 children have been killed, and they're the lucky ones. I think it's like another 10,000 children are amputees. They've had legs, arms, and God knows what amputated with no anaesthetic whatsoever. The whole thing is just, I think it's over 1 million people have been displaced. 1 million people made homeless by this unbelievable bombing. It's just what Israel is doing is just horrific. The latest thing I've heard, and not that I'm particularly well informed about it, but apparently Israel has now withdrawn its troops out of northern Gaza. Not because it's withdrawing them for military purposes, but because there is so much disease, and the disease is so rampant because there's no water and no food and so many dead bodies there that can't be buried, that a lot of the Israeli troops are dying from disease. So to save their own troops, they're now withdrawing from northern Gaza. And the other reason is they don't need to be there, because in 2 weeks, anybody who's alive there now will be dead anyway. So they're letting the disease do the business for them. They don't even need to be there. And I've even heard stories about babies being fed sewage in an effort to get some sort of sustenance into them. You know, and this is what Israel's doing. And, you know, the whole thing is blatantly clear. There's no question to anyone with any sense. It is a genocide, and it's a serious attempt at ethnic cleansing. It's the ICJ, and it's so appropriate for South Africa to bring this case to the ICJ. If anybody in the world understands about the true meaning of apartheid, it is South Africa. And it's also so brave of them to bring this case to the ICJ, because all those judges, all those people involved in bringing that case against Israel will face the most horrendous abuse. There'll be attempts to bribe them. There will be death threats against them. And they'll pay a huge price personally for trying to do this, take this to the ICJ. And yet it's such an important thing they're doing. It's so humane. It's a wonderful thing. And for the Palestinians, it's one of the first true cases of support for Palestine outside of Palestine. And if you look, I can't remember all the countries off the top of my head, but so many of the countries in the Southern Hemisphere have voted to support South Africa in this ICJ claim. And it really highlights the difference between Europe, the US and the UK, with its capitalistic and military power, against the South and all these other countries who have seen so clearly what our power, capitalism, financial and military, has done. And they've seen the injustices, the crimes against humanity and the horrors that our so-called democracy and capitalistic lifestyle is producing, and they don't want it. So you're getting a much clearer divide between the two these two big groups, one half the world and the other half the world. And it's very interesting that Netanyahu, the ICJ, have got all these reported interviews where him, his generals, his prime minister Herzog have all been calling to kill the Palestinians, to ethnically cleanse them, to clear them out of Gaza, to massacre them. All these talks have been recorded in an effort to show it is true genocide and what the powers of the Israeli government are doing. And now, all of a sudden, because he's realised that he's being seriously, you know, in trouble now, he's actually retracted it, and he's actually stated that he doesn't want to genocide them, that he doesn't want to ethnically cleanse Gaza. So this is just a little indication of the effect that this court case is having on him. The video of my partner Sal and her friend Gamzee, hopefully you've just seen this video, where they got proper tickets for a tour of the House of Parliament. They went into the House of Parliament very near the celebration, the anniversary of the Balfour Statement in 1917. and they took some tomato ketchup with them and super glue, and they glued onto the plinth of Balfour's statue inside the House of Parliament, squirted ketchup over Balfour's statue to represent the spilt Palestinian blood that Balfour's statement has caused.
Okay, just before we get into that too much, I think we ought to say a bit about who Balfour was, because I was doing a bit of research into this a couple of months ago, in November sometime, and looking at the British General Allenby's campaign of the British Army in World War One to clear out Palestine, for the get the Ottoman Turks out of the way, the Ottoman Empire, and Allenby set off from Egypt, and he made it, which was part of the British Empire. Obviously, we wanted to control the Suez Canal, and that was a big part of Britain's power over the centuries. And he started heading up towards Turkey, what's modern Turkey, through Palestine. And in October, November 1917, and let's just remind listeners that there was this very, very strange deal that was done in 1916 by the Zionists to bring the Americans in on the First World War, because the First World War, after 2 years, had become a complete stalemate. In fact, nowhere in the First World War did the British or the Allies get any German territory at all.
They lose the war very badly at that stage.
Yeah.
So
the Zionists did a deal in 1916 to bring the Americans in on the side of the British. And that left a lot of spare troops. So the British sent a load of troops, more troops, down to Egypt, which enabled Allenby to set off up north, up towards Turkey. And so in 1917, there was a battle called the Battle of Gaza, where hundreds of thousands of troops on both sides were killed. And at the end of that week, once Palestine had been taken by the British up to roughly the level of Jerusalem area. So the Balfour Declaration was published in the London Times. So this is what Balfour is about, really. It's about this secret plan, as it was at the time, to take over the Holy Land and to hand it over to this Zionist state we have today. But anyway, so a bit later on, a year later, in fact, in 1918, the Battle of Megiddo was another massive battle. Allenby had got all of his extra troops and ammunition or whatever down. And then he set off up north to take the north of Palestine. In the Battle of Megiddo, another 100,000 on each side, roughly, of soldiers were lost in the space of a week or a fortnight. And at the end of that period, the Turks, just that end of that week, in fact, the Turks signed a peace agreement with the British, and in fact, the week after, the armistice was signed in Europe too. So this sort of indicates that actually the First World War was a kind of a feint in Europe, a massive slugfest in Europe, which was the whole point of which was really just for the British to take over the Palestine area, which of course was then given to the Israelis in the next World War. So you do look at this and wonder whether it's part of a much more long-term plan by the British Empire. So I just thought I'd say that about Balfour, because it clearly seems that this whole Balfour Declaration, which was about promising this land to the Jews, or at least to the Zionist Jews, obviously the Jews that weren't particularly enthusiastic about it, that were left in Europe and didn't want to go to Israel, most of them were killed by the Nazis. So it was about really changing the whole nature of Judaism into killing off all those that weren't Zionists, you know. So anyway, yeah. Could you say something about that? I just thought it's important to say something about Balfour and his declaration, which was made public in 1917. Yeah, to claim the Holy Land for the Jews, or the Zionists, really.
Yes, yeah. And it was obviously mainly instigated by Rothschild. And so, yeah, that was basically...
Walter Rothschild, yeah.
Yes, yeah, that's right. So yeah, and that was, in effect, you know, when we gave away someone else's land, that as Sal says very clearly at the beginning of her protest, that it wasn't ours to give. You know, and it was discussed. The Palestinians weren't invited to that table in any shape or form. So as far as, obviously, a lot of background had been going on gradually over the years, but that was, in effect, the main and the most obvious culmination point at the beginning of the giving away of Palestinian land to a strange group of people.
Yeah, and so Sal was on an unofficial tour of the House of Commons, was she?
Yeah, she and a friend went on an unofficial... Well, no, it's an official tour. It's a proper guided tour. And they took ketchup with them and superglue with them, glued on, and squirted the Statue of Balfour with organic tomato ketchup to do as least damage as possible to the statue. And, yes, they gave their speech. So, of course, they were arrested, bundled in the back of vans, taken off the police station, charged, handcuffed, and all this sort of thing, which is all the way police behave with people. And I think they were eventually released, bailed, charged, and released, I think it's something like 5-6 o'clock the next morning in the middle of the night when there was nowhere to go, no money, nothing on them. And finally, after a year, they were taken to Crown Court. And theirs was the first case, because ever since the Colston case, the DPP, the government, and the courts have come up with a new charge of damage to statues. And this new charge of damage to statues, so now the maximum penalty was 10 years. So, and this was the first case. So it's obviously a very important case. And it went for the Crown Court because there's this penalty and everything. And going through the court is like going through a mincer. It's an absolute meat grinder for those involved. And the whole purpose of the process is to make it as difficult, as uncertain, and as frightening, as stressful as they can make it. You've no idea how it's going to work. You've no idea what the outcome's going to be. You've no idea how on earth you're going to fund it. And the whole thing's a nightmare. The whole thing now with legal aid, that's been withdrawn to such an extent, it's almost impossible now to get legal aid. And eventually, after a lot of trouble, Sal managed to do a lot of crowdfunding. She got an awful lot of help from people who support Palestine. And finally, she'd managed to get enough through crowdfunding, and it was all incredibly last minute and stressful, to pay for a really top class barrister to represent her. And the whole thing went to court. It was at Southwark Court, and it's ridiculous, really. The whole first 2 days were spent arguing over whether it was violent protest to squirt organic ketchup over a statue, or whether it's non-peaceful protest to squirt ketchup over a statue. At the end of the day, I suspect we were very fortunate. The judge seemed to be very fair and balanced about it all. And it was very heartrending, and giving evidence is so hard, so frightening, and having to face up to cross-examination was a terrifying experience for someone who's very lacking in self-confidence. It's extremely stressful and difficult, but both girls gave absolutely amazing evidence and stood up incredibly well under self-evidence, under cross-examination. And anyway, eventually, after 6 days, the jury went out, and they came back, and they found them both not guilty. It was a completely unanimous verdict, and the sense of relief was incredible. After the verdict, the judge stood up and is summing up, and he said, it is incredibly important, especially in effect of the present laws against protest and change of laws. He said, it's incredibly important in this country that we maintain our rights to protest and our freedom of speech. And to hear a judge say that in the court was really encouraging and really hopeful. And the fact that he felt he had to say that was a very large indictment, I felt, of our government's policy towards protest.
Yeah, it seems increasingly the tactics of police and government are to intimidate to such an extent that hopefully people won't do things, and in effect to maybe jail them for a while, but knowing that quite often if this comes to court, particularly Crown Court with a jury, that the police will lose the case. So yeah, this is maybe why we have these sort of desperate measures, like with your sister the other day.
Yes, I know, absolutely. And what the government's doing now and the courts are all doing, I mean, we have very few defences open to us. But the defences that we do have open to us, such as necessity and all these other defences, at the beginning of the trial, the judge just removes them all. We had our defences removed from us. The only defence we were allowed to use was the defence of consent, which is a ridiculous defence in reality. It's quite ridiculous, but it can be effective, and it did work for us. But now, since that, since you know they were both found not guilty using that defence, the DPP have now ordered an investigation into the defence of consent with the aim of making that, even that defence, inaccessible to us to use as a defence anymore. So, you know, whenever a jury finds us not guilty, whatever way it's been happening, the court process is trying to eliminate and cut that out so that defence can't be used again. And they're making it almost impossible for us to defend ourselves. I mean, I don't understand how a court can decide that you're not allowed to use the defence in law. I don't understand how that works, but they can and they do.
Well, they shouldn't be. I mean, there are some other cases around at the moment as well, aren't there? Some of them are active. So, I mean, particularly, actually, I think, what about the Elbit cases? Because I think that there have been quite a lot of actions against this drone manufacturer, arms manufacturer, which is helping, you know, sending its stuff from the UK for the Israelis to kill Gaza and civilians, and some people taking action against Elbit.
Well, basically, and I do know quite a lot about this, Elbit is a company that produces 85% of the Israeli army's weapons. And this Israeli arms company, Elbit, has got 9 factories in this country producing. They produce the engines for the drones. They produce white phosphorus in this country. They produce rifles, sniper rifles, ammunition. They produce parts for tanks, electronic parts for surveillance, electronic parts for fighter jets, for the aircraft, for the F-35 aircraft that we sell to Israel. And our government grants them export licenses and makes a fortune out of exporting this, all these awful weapons, to Israel to kill the Palestinians. And here the one hand is pretending, our government is pretending to lament the scale of death and everything of the Palestinians, but on the other hand, they're arming Israel to the hilt to enable them to kill Palestinians. So Palestine Action very bravely are attacking this Israeli armaments company, Elbit. And they go in there and they get up on their roofs and they smash the roofs up and they try and cease production. And so it's literally every day that we manage to shut one of those Elbit factories down for a day. It's almost like saying a Palestinian has got another day of life. So by trying to shut these factories down, it's a really important process that we're doing. And, you know, it's just incredible that I had no idea that we've got 10 of these factories in England making these horrific weapons for Israel.
So what's been going on in regards to actions against Elbit since the, or maybe even a bit before the 7th of October?
Well, basically, there was a huge action in against the Leicester factory, where they blockaded the factory for a long time. A lot of the locals came out and protested against it. One of our most successful actions was there was a huge factory in Oldham, an Elbit factory in Oldham, making these horrific weapons. And we protested there so many times, people locked on outside, threw red paint, occupied the roof. And then all the locals got to hear there was this factory, and when they were walking their kids to school, they were walking past this horrific arms factory, which they didn't know about. They all came out in fury about it all. And thousands of them came out protesting against this factory. In the end, the factory closed. So that was a hugely successful protest. So it's really hard because since 1948, I mean, I was sent out to Palestine. I was trained by the Quakers for a year. I was sent out to Palestine as a humanitarian witness for 3 months. And for 3 months, on a daily basis, I witnessed the atrocities and the horrors of the illegal Israeli occupation of the Palestinian homeland. One of the worst incidents I saw was when a family were burnt alive by white phosphorus. And that I came back home to England with PTSD from what I'd seen out there. And then I spent 3 years writing to my MP, writing letters against JCB, who provide all the machinery to demolish all the Palestinian homes. I'd gone on peaceful protests, written endless letters, got so many letters to my MP, it's ridiculous, and all this sort of stuff. And then I thought eventually, well, people have been doing this stuff since 1948. And look at the result. Palestine now has lost more land than ever. There's been more Palestinians killed than any other time. There are now upwards of 7 million Palestinian refugees worldwide. One in every three refugee worldwide is a Palestinian. And can you imagine the brutality and the horror to create a 7 million Palestinian refugee problem, forcing 7 million people out of their homeland? The brutality used to do something on that scale. And you know what Israel is doing is horrific, I'm afraid. It's just horrendous. But it's so well covered up. The media is so on side with Israel. All we ever hear about, all I was ever brought up with, is poor little Israel, these horrific Palestinian terrorists. And the media is so biased and prejudiced in its reporting of the true situation out there. It's very difficult for people, when they've had a lifetime of hearing all this propaganda against Palestine, to understand the truth of what is actually happening out there. And it's only probably because of TikTok, Instagram, and all this stuff that the news is actually coming out. And I think, as we all know, in Gaza, Israel hates the news coming out of what's going on in Gaza, what it's doing in Gaza. And it specifically targets and assassinates journalists. I think at the moment it's killed over 120 journalists in Gaza. So it's very difficult to get the news out, to get these videos out of what Israel's doing. But people are so brave there. They do keep managing to get the word out. So we are finding out what's going on in there. The ICJ is prosecuting Israel over genocide. And the world is genuinely beginning to see what a rogue state Israel is and what horrors it's committing throughout the world and how it just wants to go on endlessly. It's desperately trying to ramp up the war against Lebanon, against Hezbollah. It's constantly bombing Syria. It's trying to get involved and get the US and UK involved in the war against Yemen. It's genociding the Palestinians in Gaza. It wants to get rid of them. It wants to force them all into some tented camp in the middle of the Sinai. It wants to make this huge canal bringing oil to this brand new port of Gaza they want to create so they can maximize and profit from all the oil that's just been discovered off the Gaza coast that should be the Palestinian oil. And it's just awful and so inhumane what Israel's trying to do. And I think genuinely, finally, the world is actually beginning to see, you know, what is going on and what crimes Israel is producing.
One of the latest things, of course, with all this reporting from Gaza, where this is an ongoing genocide, where we've got very few journalists left, Those that are being sent there are having second thoughts themselves, or else the media companies are saying, well, we're sorry, the insurance is too high, and anyway, it's just not safe to send you there. So many of these atrocities are going on right now with nobody there to witness them or record them. Quite obviously, that's deliberate, to have no witnesses to these crimes. And as part of all that, this week, for 3 days, we've had no internet, or almost no internet in Gaza. People don't necessarily follow this stuff, but if you go to the NetBlocks Twitter account, NetBlocks, you'll see that the Gaza Strip has been offline for well over 72 hours this week. Disruption is the longest sustained telecoms blackout on record, and will significantly limit visibility. So for large periods, there's actually no internet at all. So, you know, this is another way of shutting all this out. But anyway, what about the action or planned action this week against the stock exchange by Palestine Action? What do you make? What are the motives behind that? What do you know about it?
Well, I think basically the motives behind it is that we are funding the war in Israel. Barclays Bank is one of the biggest providers of funds to Israel for its arms. And obviously, if you can try and slow down this funding or attack this funding in any way, then you're affecting, or you're trying to affect, Israel's capability of buying weapons to fund its war against Palestine. I suspect that was, I don't actually know, but that's my take on it. And the stock exchange is where all this money is made. So I'm guessing that this is why the stock exchange was the target. I think they plan to lock on, and that's where they lock on to each other. So it makes it very difficult for the peace to move them, and spray red paint over the stock exchange to indicate the money there that is causing the spilling of Palestinian blood. None of it particularly violent or bad stuff, in my opinion, in any shape or form, but I think a very effective form of protest. But obviously, because it was going to affect financial, the police take it very seriously.
Yeah, apparently it's the Daily Express that leaked that this was going to happen at the weekend. Although I would suggest to you, it's almost certainly the Met telling the Daily Express, or somebody else doing the surveillance rather than the Daily Express. Maybe MI5, could even be the Israeli intelligence feeding the information to the Daily Express, since they seem to be able to do what they want here in the UK. And there's no effective sovereignty when it comes to intelligence working here.
Well, Britain, but if I can just take you up on that for a moment. I think it's about a year ago, Suella Braverman teamed up with the head of the police and Mossad and the Israeli embassy to create this task force, ostensibly to be a task force committed to fighting racism. But the main thrust of it was basically against anti-Semitism. And this task force had the job of trying to shut down basically any protest against Israel. And it was formed to take out any protesters and anyone. And it's just very frightening that Mossad was drafted into this task force. And you think, you know, here we've got England, and we're leaving over the policing and the control of our own people, our own citizens, to a foreign power, to the Secret Service with a horrendous reputation. We're giving them authority and power over our own citizens who are protesting against the suffering of others, trying to stop the suffering of others. And you could understand it if these people were killing people or injuring people or murdering people or raping people, but not. It's these people who are protesting for Palestine are deeply caring people. They're very brave people. They want to stop the suffering of others. And we're so persecuted. We're so crushed. We're attacked by the police. We're attacked by the courts. We're sent to prison. not because we've done anything wrong or anything bad, but genuinely because we're brave enough to stand up for the suffering of others.
Well, I think history will be very kind to Palestine Action. It's one of those things, isn't it? There was all that hatred, apparently, of Nelson Mandela until he'd succeeded in booting the racists and the apartheid people out of South Africa, the AWB and Pik Berta and all the rest of them.
Same with the suffragettes. You know, they were hated at the time. They were beaten up so badly by the police. Suffragettes were killed. And at the time, they were the worst people going. And yet now, when you see what their bravery has achieved, you know, they're heroes now, and they're celebrated, and they were wonderful. And women now have got so much to thank the bravery of the suffragettes for standing up and fighting against the oppression of women. And it's exactly the same with what PA, Palestine Action, and those who are fighting to support the Palestinians are doing now. You know, they are on the side of right. I've got court cases hanging over me, but it doesn't worry. Well, it does worry me, but I know that whatever the court decides, I'm on the side of right. I'm on the side of human rights and human justice. And that's all I need to know. And I think that's all we need to know. We are on the side of right. And history hopefully will judge us as such.
No, it will. I'm sure it will. And of course, these things do have to come to court. This is the problem, is you cannot rely outside the court system on any kind of change taking place. Once you challenge evil actions of whatever sort in the court, suddenly, you know, you actually got the potential of the law being on your side. And the devil being shamed in that situation. Anyway, look, a man's been charged with conspiracy to cause public nuisance after an alleged plot to disrupt the London Stock Exchange and cause huge economic damage was revealed. Sean Middlesbrough, 31, from Liverpool, this is the Evening Standard, says, will appear at Wirral Magistrates Court on Monday, the Metropolitan Police have said. Five other people, three women and two men, were also arrested in connection with the alleged plot, they should say, but actually here in this very sloppy article it says plot, and have been, which, that, you know, that should be brought up in court, saying, hang on a minute, you know, what's the Evening Standard doing, saying that there really was a plot here? They shouldn't be saying that, especially after someone's been charged. Make sure the solicitors get that bit of information. And have been bailed pending further inquiries, Scotland Yard said. The Met began an investigation after being passed information on Friday by the Daily Express. Activists from the group Palestine Action were allegedly plotting to target the London Stock Exchange, causing damage and locking on to stop the building opening for trading. Well, it was said in the same bulletin I heard on Monday this week that actually none of the stock exchange trading could be stopped by locking the door, because it's all being done remotely nowadays. So it does seem like this could end up another open and shut case, but let's not try and prejudge any of it. I mean, what do you think? I mean, what is it about Palestine Action generally? What's the principle of this, the sort of action that you're taking as against these massive marches? We had this week another 500,000 people marching in London in support of Palestine.
Well, I think if you looked at it, like I said earlier on, people have been writing polite letters to their MPs. They've been doing peaceful protests, peaceful marches ever since 1948. And things have just got worse and worse and worse. It doesn't work. It's not effective. Before Blair took us to war to massacre Iraq, 2 million people, British citizens, caring citizens, protested outside the House of Parliament against the decision to go to war with Iraq. They might just as well have not bothered for the effect they had on the government. So what Palestine Action is saying is quite a well-known saying. You don't beg your government to dig a well for those who have got no water. You just jolly well go out there, dig the well yourself, and dare the government to stop you. And that's the basis of how we operate. We don't ask the government to do anything now. It's a waste of time. We have to go out there and take direct action ourselves and try and stop these horrendous injustices. And we're trying to stop these horrendous weapons being taken to Israel and used to slaughter Palestinians. Elbit uses the people of Gaza as its testing ground, and it markets its weapons as battle-tested on the people of Gaza, the Palestinians. And that's a huge marketing edge for them. And they sell their weapons worldwide, backed up on this. The citizens of Gaza, the people of Gaza, are completely defenceless. Hamas are just like guerrillas on the ground, rushing about in sandals. So there's no air defences. There's no army there. There's no navy. There's no air force. They're completely defenceless. And Israel just sends its bombers in and destroys everything there. No risk. They just sit in their offices, twiddle their computer sticks, and another 1,000 people are dead. And, you know, we're trying to stop, Palestine Action are trying to stop this flow of weapons going in to Israel to kill the Palestinians. Our government's authorising this flow of weapons, and we're trying to stop that. And I think it's a very good thing we're trying to do. You know, all right, we may break a few windows, we may do a little bit of damage on the roofs, but compared to the horrendous weapons that come out of those factories in England and get sent straight to Israel to kill the Palestinians, we're trying to prevent death, we're trying to prevent suffering. And what we're doing is right, in my mind, there's absolutely no question about that.
Just finally on the tactics here, apparently the Express have said that it was discussions taking place on Signal that were leaked to them, which is one of these messenger apps. Now, whether they had somebody as part of that discussion that was spying on them, I mean, what would be your take on using these kinds of methods, such as using your phone and messenger apps to organise actions?
Well, I think if you're trying to organise an action, it doesn't matter who you are, whatever you do in life, you have to be organised. You have to have communication. Any army exists on communication. And the police force, using Israeli surveillance techniques and skills and technology, are very good at interrupting our communications. And so, it's common sense. If you want to communicate and organise and do these sort of actions, you have to try and make your communications as close and as guarded as you possibly can. Any organisation would try and do that. Obviously, you can't be effective. You know, we don't have the technology to compete with the police's technology. And obviously, we're at risk here. I don't know how this reporter somehow inveigled his way into Palestine Action, and he obviously discovered what was going on by some means or other. But it's very difficult, I suppose. You know, Palestine Action has had a lot of new members join it because they've seen what we're trying to do. They've seen we're trying to stop this horrendous flow of weapons into Israel, and they've got conscience. And they want to try and stop these weapons. So they're joining Palestine Action. We get a lot of new people joining Palestine Action. And, you know, what they're doing is right. And there's always a huge price to pay. If you try and do what's right, there's always a price to pay. And I think it's very brave, the stuff they do, the price.
Yeah, but you can't really have a proper vetting process. I mean, you've just got to accept people on face value, really, if they're prepared to risk arrest and that sort of thing. But look, what about, I mean, I said finally, but what about the moves to actually make it illegal to boycott Israel?
Well, again, I think this is a horrendous move. I mean, Maggie Thatcher would have loved to have done the same thing when people first started doing apartheid and trying to boycott South Africa. She would have loved to have made it illegal, but fortunately, it was so much against human rights and freedom of speech and freedom of choice that she didn't do it. But this government, because it doesn't give a damn about human rights, it doesn't give a damn about freedom of speech, and it doesn't give a damn about the rights of its own citizens, its own councils. All it cares about is supporting Israel and funding its war to genocide the Palestinians and the money it makes from war. That's all this government cares about. And they will do anything under pressure from the Israeli embassy to stop any effective means we've got of trying to limit what Israel does. BDS is one of the most, boycott, divest and sanction system is one of the most effective tools that the man in the street and our councils have to try and have an impact on Israel. It's hugely, it's our best and most effective tool. And all Israel wants to do is remove that tool. It's their biggest threat, and they've invested millions in trying to stop BDS across the world. It's one of their biggest fears. And they forced our government into passing this law now from banning all our councils, removing all their choice of who they invest their money with, who they invest their pensions with, and who they're allowed to deal with and not deal with. Our councils now don't have the right anymore to choose whether they want to not deal with a company that's sending money to Israel to arm Israel or not. And it's a horrendous law, and it's so against human rights. And yet the government to force it through, they got such a
power. It's called the Economic Activity of Public Bodies, in brackets, Overseas Matters Bill, is now in the House of Lords. So it isn't quite law yet, but the votes have been pretty fine on it, 282 to 235 in the Commons, for example. Of course, King Charles has to sign this off at the last minute. It's his job, and so he won't, I'm sure.
Well, he will sign it off. Seems to have no more care about the Palestinians than any of the government. He's been bought and paid for by Israel just the same as our government has.
Well, one of the things that's come out of this is this. I mean, we're seeing this today with the Houthis this week being classified as a terrorist organisation. Well, of course, the Houthis are the government of Yemen. We're also seeing Hamas being proscribed as a terrorist organisation, Hezbollah. All these various organisations legitimately represent the people of their countries, whether it's Lebanon, Palestine or Yemen. And yet they're being classified as terrorist organisations. Now, this seems to me to be an attempt to make these people stateless and to try and accuse them in international courts of not actually having a state when they should do or they do. And in the meantime, one of the tactics used against Israel, or at least people are now saying, that Israel should lose its right to statehood, should lose its right to be a legitimate state under the UN Charter, etc., because of its actions. So it seems as if that, in a way, is an attempt to demonise these particular countries. And, of course, we're now, unofficially anyway, at war with Yemen. So they've managed to do this by saying that this country are all terrorists. Well, it's a bit sneaky, isn't it, Nick? And obviously, the Yemenis haven't actually been killing people at all in the Red Sea by shooting missiles at the various ships. Although, of course, it would be very simple and easy for them to sink HMS Diamond if they wanted to. The British Navy destroyer, I think it is, sitting there. So the whole thing seems to be almost like that destroyer is sitting there as bait. You know, sink us, we can escalate this even further.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely, which is a very common Israeli ploy of doing that sort of thing. They will set something up, a horrendous thing, to give them the excuse to do even worse things. That's how Israel works. They're famous at the blue flag or false flag situation. They are the worst country in the world for doing that. And people don't see it. People don't recognise it.
Just looking at the latest, and this really is finally, the Milton Keynes branch of Kuhn Nagel, which is K-U-E-H-N-E, sounds a bit like Laura Koonsberg, Nagel, N-A-G-E-L, was targeted last night by Palestine Action. So the firm facilitate the genocide of the Palestinian people by transporting weaponry on behalf of Israel's biggest arms producer, Elbit. So I'm very pleased to see the entire building absolutely daubed with, I don't think this is all tomato ketchup, Nick. It looks like proper red paint to me, and it's going to be a bit of an awkward job. And of course, this is a brilliant tactic, painting these things with red paint everywhere. Not only does it mean that they have to get it all scrubbed off, but also all the locals near these buildings can see, oh, maybe they're involved a bit in killing people with this red paint everywhere.
Yes, yeah, no, it's a very good tactic of Palestine Action. It very clearly indicates that company, the blood it has on its hands by its actions. I think it's a very good way of indicating that to the world and telling people what this company does and how complicit it is, directly complicit in the genocide of the Palestinian people.
Okay, Nick Georges, just to mention the Palestine Action Twitter account. I still call it Twitter. I don't know about everybody else. I think X is a bit of a pretentious way of calling it. But anyway, it's PAL_Action is the Palestine Action Twitter account. Maybe you could just say something about how the organisation is organised, whether it's a sort of regional groups and that sort of thing, Nick.
Yes, there are, it is split up, I suppose, into certain areas. If you're interested in joining and supporting PA, there's all sorts of ways you can do it. We always need people. Lots of our members get arrested, so we need people to do jail support and go and wait outside the police station. So when they get released at 5 o'clock in the morning with no money or no phone or anything, there's people there to support and help them and transport them about, buy them food and everything. So we need people for that. We need people to do court support, to go to court, wave flags outside the court and to give support outside the court. When our members get sent to prison, we need people to do prison support, to write to them, to support them in prison. So there's all sorts of ways. You know, you don't necessarily have to climb on factory roofs and try and shut factories down, but there's all sorts of ways that you can support Palestine Action in a positive way to try and stop this arms flow of weapons into Israel.
Yeah, so even though we can't necessarily change the mind of evil dictators like Rishi Sunak, we maybe can do something to stop the, like you say, the flow of weapons. So Nick Georges of Palestine Action, thanks very much for joining us again.
Okay, thanks very much, Tony. All the best to you.